like that. Remus Amansky, welcome to the Edge Broadcast.
Hey, nice to see you.
Wow, man. I've watched a few videos and got some updates and the things you're doing out there, particularly regarding your book, 50 Shades of Grey. Evidence of extraterrestrial visitations to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and beyond. I notice other interviewers just shorten that, and they don't mention that and beyond, because tonight we're going to go and beyond.
That's great.
But good to have you on the program, Raymond. Let's just get this thing started and tell the folks how you got looking into the UFO genre.
Well, I reported to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in 1975, in January of 1975. And the very first week, I had a mentor assigned to me. He was a mid-level engineer, and we'll call him Al. So our building was one of a two stories, and then there was a huge hangar about 250 feet in width. Mm-hmm. And then on the other end was an identical two-story office building. So we had to go from our two-story building through the hangar to get to the Greasy Spoon, the cafeteria. And Al says to me, "Hey, let's go get a candy bar. You know, I'll show you where the coffee shop is." So we step into this hangar, and we get a few feet in. It's dark. It's dirty. It's not being used at the time. And he says to me, "Have you heard about our aliens?"
Whoa.
And I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, you know, there was a crash out west, and they brought the aliens here back in, you know, 1947, and they're machines." I said, "I didn't know about that." He said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, where are they?" He said, "Well, they keep them in the tunnels." I said, "They keep them in the tunnels? We have tunnels?" He said, "Sure. We've got tunnels everywhere." So the conversation went like that, and he basically was, I don't know, maybe like a fraternity hazing or something, but he was letting me in on a very poorly kept secret, because by 1973, Project Blue Book had already been there with Grudge and Sign for 22 years, and everybody knew that Wright-Patterson personnel were investigating UFOs. So there was always that connection from day one. But it was this Al guy who went on to become a member of the Senior Executive Service. Now, an SES is a very special position. They are approved by Congress. So when he left, when he retired a few years ago, he was the equivalent of a U.S. general or an admiral. So I kind of got my baptism from not just a run-of-the-mill engineer, but somebody who went on to actually distinguish themselves.
Hmm.
And that's where it all started.
So it's sort of a running secret.
Yeah, I said, "You know, if it's a secret, how do you know about it?" And he said, "Well, everybody knows about it." To which I replied, "Well, what's your definition of secret?"
Wow. Raymond, when somebody tells you that, at that point in your life, were you even aware of, say, like UFO phenomenon? Was it a joke to you? Were you just like, "It's out there, I don't really care"? How did that change your worldview? Did you think, "Wow, did I just hear that?" I mean, how did that affect you?
I'm not sure I took it literally. It sounded very serious. It sounded like he was indoctrinating me, kind of like welcoming me into the fraternity. But I went around in the ensuing weeks and I talked to folks. I talked to like a guy in accounting, and I said, "Hey, you know, Al told me this. You know, what do you think?" And they go, "Yeah, sure. You know, they're kept in the tunnels." It was a very consistent kind of message. So I felt, well, maybe that was a story that was going around. That's how mm-hmm. they condensed it. That's how they kept it. Mm-hmm. And they just shared it with me. Mm. So, you know, as the years went on, I kind of snooped and I started to take it more seriously. But I didn't really dive into it, you know, probably until the mid-90s. When I had a lot of time, you know, the family was starting to get growing, and I could really read everything I wanted to and start to investigate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I then really started to take it serious, especially when they had the Phoenix sighting, the Phoenix Lights mm-hmm. in 1997. And for me, that was kind of a aha moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had Dr. Lynn Katai on this program. She's one of the ones that took a lot of video. And that, as you mentioned, that was almost a defining event there, because so many people saw that, and it lasted so long. And you know, there's another one that kind of reminds me of Raymond. That is the Stephenville sighting. It seemed, they claimed, that craft was a mile long. Did they speculate how big the Phoenix Lights craft was?
There were some documentaries that I saw, and the witnesses were saying, from mountain to mountain, and they could estimate the distance and do a little mathematics, and it was somewhere between 1 and 2 miles wide. I also got a chance to talk to a mother and daughter. It was at the International UFO Congress a couple years ago, and they were eyewitnesses. They were actually driving in the Phoenix area on the highway, and this thing passed over their car. Mm-hmm. And they described it to me. It was just absolutely an amazing testimony.
That event was brought to the public as sort of a joke. I remember the governor making fun of that event. I think at one time he was on stage and he brought a 10-foot alien on stage. Are you aware of that?
Absolutely. I saw it. Symington was his name.
Yeah, Symington. And I'm thinking, and I think later he actually came out and said either they made me do it or I had to do it. But now I'm kind of believing it was really something.
Well, not only that, but it was 10 years later. He came out in a documentary and he said, I saw it myself. I was out with my wife. We went outside and we saw it ourselves. But he said I couldn't say anything because I didn't want to incite panic.
All right.
Well, what we did at Wright-Patterson then is, I won't call it harassment, but we teased the heck out of the public affairs people at Luke Air Force Base. We send them some emails and say, hey, we read that stupid story about some Air National Guard dropping flares. And we said, mm-hmm. we've worked for the Air Force for 30-some years, and you're embarrassing the crap out of us. You know, it's better than a weather balloon thing, but I'm afraid to tell anybody I work for the Air Force because it's embarrassing. You guys have to come up with better things. And once in a while, we'd get a little ping back like, hey, stay off our backs, Jack.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, we got a question from Rupert Fellows in our YouTube chat. And by the way, Raymond, we have a website chat going on. We have our YouTube channel's got a chat going on, and people send in questions through our fast blast. But this is a Rupert Fellows from the UK, I believe. He says, Raymond, what do you think about the Skinny Bob video? Is that, you familiar with that?
I've heard of it. I've never watched it, mm-hmm. so I can't render an opinion.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Now, this, our show does claim to be controversial, so hey, we're just going to go with this question here. From Pat Wright. It says, I lived on Wright-Patterson in 1967 at age 3, and I was attacked and molested by reptilians at the base housing. Why did this happen?
Never heard of that. Didn't make the press. But I can tell you an interesting thing about the base housing. Most of the base housing has been torn down, and the reason is there were some things that were buried in the ground. I'm not sure if I can recall if they were radioactive or not at that point, but I do know that there were some chemicals in the ground, and it caused them to tear out a lot of the base housing. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe somebody went all reptilian on the residents. I couldn't tell you. Never heard that story.
You mentioned tunnels a few minutes ago. Do you know if these tunnels connect to, say, the Denver Airport?
I doubt it. That'll be a long way to go. But mm-hmm. you got to think about this. People are surprised about tunnels and vaults. Wright-Patterson Air Force Base has tons of secret, top secret work. You have to have vaults. You have to have tunnels. There's nothing ominous about it. You know, it's like a city. You have to have cars. You have to have buses. Mm-hmm. It just comes with the territory. So nobody should be surprised that any research facility for the government has tunnels and vaults, that it comes with the territory. Mm. But no, I can't imagine a reason for them to have a tunnel. That's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. As far as the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, did you ever go down in those tunnels?
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes tunnels do nothing more than just connect buildings together. There are several buildings in a management complex all connected by tunnels. And down in those tunnels are a series of vault doors mm-hmm. used by, I don't know, I didn't camp out in front of those doors to see who was coming in and out. But clearly, you know, nearly every day during one of my assignments, I pass down a tunnel with maybe a series of three or four vault doors going who knows where. It's just, you know, part of the turf.
Did you ever see any craft there or evidence of a craft being there?
Of an alien craft? No, and I always try to tell everybody, it's a very legitimate question, but you got to think about this. The crash happened in 1947. I show up in 1973, you know, 20-some years later. How bad would the Air Force be if they couldn't keep an alien craft out of my sight after a heads up of, you know, a 26-year head start? Just doesn't make sense. But no, not inadvertently, and, you know, nobody led me to see them. So, but that doesn't mean they hadn't been there at one time or another.
And as far as Pat Wright goes, talking about being molested by reptilians, I mean, that kind of goes in the alien abduction side of it, where many people have claimed that they have been abducted and various experiments have been performed on them. What do you think about regressive hypnotherapy to go into that? Is that a legitimate field?
Sure. That brings up my second book. I'll segue into it. The second book is 50 Shades of Grey's Victoria's Secret Truth. And that is a story. Thank you. Kudos to your producer there, or your fast fingering. This is a story.
Well, I have been accused of fast fingering. How did you know that? But it had nothing to do with the show.
Well, Victoria's Secret Truth is a story of a mid 50s lady, very pretty. She has corporate experience in software, hardware, sales, and her family has had multi-generational contact. The best evidence that they have, besides photographic evidence of scars and scoops and some other things and medical records, the best evidence are hypnotic regressions. And in this case, Victoria has had four hypnotic regressions by three world-class hypnotherapists, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, Yvonne Smith, and Barbara Lamb. And if you look at the legal system, they have what are called hypnotically enhanced memories. So if you bring somebody to the court, you put them into a trance, and you try to give testimony, that's not acceptable. But if they go to a hypnotherapist and they're regressed and they're able to recall details under hypnosis, that testimony is admissible in court by law. So what do I think of it? I think if the court is going to accept it as evidence, we should too, especially if that hypnosis has been performed by somebody who's performed thousands of them. And in Victoria's case, each of her therapists have had probably a minimum of 2,000 cases themselves. So world-class hypnosis, and it really revealed the story there. So I believe in it. I think it's evidence that can go to court, and it should be respected.
All right, we have this question from, again, from Rupert. What do you think about granite underground buildings in Antarctica?
Never been there. Haven't investigated it. You know, I'd say anything is possible, but I really haven't investigated it, so I can't answer that.
By the way, we got a reply from Pat earlier talking about being molested by reptilians. They say it was their personal experience and not news. All right, from our YouTube channel, our chat, we have Azur. She says, or asks, Raymond, from a religious standpoint, what's your opinion on aliens being the fallen angels from the Bible?
I don't think anybody really knows who we're in contact with. For example, in Victoria's case, she described seeing insectoids, mantis, grays. Where do they come from? Thank you. Are they you know, something from the heavens or the hells? I really don't know. I think the easiest thing to digest is perhaps they come from another planet. So whether it has religious aspects to it or not, I really don't know. My gut feel is probably not.
Now, I think the safer explanation for a lot of folks is it's a little bit of all of them, all of the above, you know, demon apparitions and up into and including actual beings from another planet. Of course, there are also those, I'm sure, Raymond, you're aware, that they claim coming from underneath the earth. And there's certainly a phenomenon called underwater submerged objects. Is that what it is? USOs?
Yes, USOs. And most definitely, if you look at some of the recent publicity that has been given to what's called the Nimitz Affair, the Tic Tac and the Gimbal. I was out in Laughlin, Nevada last week at UFO MegaCon. And I was one of the speakers out there. There were 50 of us, 50 speakers. Fantastic. And as part of that group, they had four individuals who served in that area with the Nimitz. Mm-hmm. And these folks were eyewitnesses or radar scope witnesses to the number of UFOs. And they said that, well, sure, they captured one or two on their gun cameras. Mm-hmm. But they said at last week's conference, there were dozens of them in the air, up and down and all, dozens of them. And that there's films out there, and they were going in the water and out of the water, and they were watching, these guys were watching the bubbles, and they saw huge crafts underneath the water. The submarines picked these crafts up. There was a huge exercise going on where the Tic Tac UFO was actually filmed, and the submarines that were part of this exercise were picking up signals of large underwater craft moving at incredible speeds.
Wow.
So yeah, they could be hiding out, easily hiding out somewhere.
Isn't there a Navy ship that there's testimony of the sailors that a USO come up out of the water and paralleled the ship, floated right by the ship, and they said they could actually look into the windows and see beings?
This is that same exercise. And the Nimitz is the ship that everybody points to, probably because it's the nuclear carrier. Mm-hmm. But there are many eyewitnesses. These four came forward. I'm sure there's many, many more. And there's I understand there's a documentary by the guys. It's to the Stars Academy. It's going to be on a History Channel probably in the next couple months. Mm-hmm. And one of the episodes is going to be on that incident. And the guys that were there in Laughlin are going to be part of that. But their testimony was just awe-inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we have this question from Rose out of the YouTube chat. She asked, what do you think about the Brown Mountain Lights?
I've actually passed through there. I go east every year to do some research. I've researched the UFOs in Myrtle Beach and that area. And again, I've been tempted to go look. I've talked to a ton of people. There is obviously something odd going out there. But what I would like to see is a serious investigation where they can eliminate all the prosaic possibilities, like campers or people doing hoaxes, whatever it is, a fraternity out there doing something. I'd love to see them investigate a way there's a logging road that cars are coming back and forth. That's what I would really like to see. And then once you get rid of all the prosaic explanations, now you've got yourself a real mystery. I think it's a great mystery. I'm enticed by it. And someday, coming back on the East Coast, I think I'm going to stop and give it a look myself.
Wow, yeah, it sounds like a good day trip right there, man. I mean, other people,
absolutely.
You know, some people go see a movie, some people go see alien activity, you know, I mean, so it can happen, man, you know.
Well, that's my thing. That's what I do.
Uh-huh. All right, we have this question from Doug Wright says, have you seen any aliens at Wright-Patterson?
The answer is a definite no. And I've seen a lot of strange-looking people there, some of whom I think might be aliens. But and I got to tell you this. You know, I don't know if I've really told anybody this before, but after you go to these conferences, and I've probably gone to maybe 8 major conferences now, Contact in the Desert, International UFO Congress, now the UFO MegaCon. When you meet people who claim to be hybrids and people who have had contact with hybrids and you hear the stories, you get what I call ET radar. And so many times now, I've been able to talk to somebody about the topic. They'll come up to me, we'll have a little chat. And somewhere in the middle of that conversation, it dawns on me that these are experiencers. And I have like a 90% hit ratio where I'll start asking them the right question, and they're totally unaware that they're an experiencer, that they've had contact. Mm-hmm. And just by asking the right questions, I will eventually get to the point, and collectively we will discover that they are indeed experiencers.
Wow.
So there's a lot of folks out there and trying to answer the question. Now, if I go back and I think of some of the people I met at Right Pad, there's a good possibility that some of them have had contact. In fact, there's a couple of them I'm absolutely positive of. But no, per se, an alien with a big gray head and big eyes, I didn't see one on the base.
And I note that I think it was in your bio section that we did a copy and paste from your information. But it says, think all reported UFOs are a misidentification of the planet Venus. Think there's no such thing as men in black. Now, I got to know, man, are there men in black?
In my opinion, yes. And the reason I say that is that there's a history. A lot of people have reported it. You know, there's some great, great stories out there. Rex Heflin was out in Santa Ana. He took those photographs. He took four photographs. He was this traffic guy, and he was out, I guess, surveying a place for a new traffic light. And it looked like kind of like a top hat. And three of the pictures had the UFO in it, and the fourth photo had like this ring, like a smoke ring, but gigantic, about the size of the UFO. He took them with a Polaroid. Those photos were never debunked, but somebody came along one day dressed in suits, dark suits, and came to his house and said, hey, we'd like to borrow them. Now, he'd already loaned them out in the ensuing weeks after the incident. And he said, where are you from? And they said, well, we're from the Marine base, and, you know, we're investigators. And he'd already loaned them out. So he loaned them out to these folks. He did not see those photographs again for 28 years.
Wow.
So Men in Black come. They take the photographs. He gets a phone call one day. It's a female voice. Hey, check your mailbox. He goes out there. Nothing. Half hour later, he gets another call. Same woman. Check your mailbox again. He goes out. The same three photographs he'd given up 28 years earlier showed up in his mailbox.
Wow.
It's a mind blower. Look up the Rex Heflin story and how those things disappeared and how they were taken by Men in Black. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. And I've actually met a guy who works in a top secret facility at Wright Pat who looks, walks, and talks and dresses just like a man in black. So for me, you know, there's really good odds. I'm gonna take the over on that one.
Yeah, I think we could probably assume that the one that you suspect is a man in black doesn't have, say, like a pen with a light to zap you, right, and then make you forget everything. He probably doesn't have that technology.
He did not display it to me. But
you're not leaving that out. You're not saying you're not dismissing that, are you?
No, but I'll neuralize. I own one of those, and I'll neuralize your crowd if you approve it at the end of the show.
Wow.
You agree?
Yeah, I'd neuralize them now if I could.
All right.
Sounds like a pretty cool thing to do, man. All right, another question for you. Have you heard of Valiant Thor?
I have.
And it says, are the stories true in your opinion?
I think it's kind of interesting of what I know. Somebody was friends with him. He used to show up at his social gatherings. The guy could disappear. You know, I can only believe what I read. And, you know, the stories that I've vetted already kind of rival that. You know, Victoria of Victoria's Secret Truth was floated through a wall onto a waiting spacecraft. And there she encountered three insectoids dressed in what she calls Jesuit robes, and there they telepathically talked to her, and they talked about her guidance and her future.
Wow.
So I'm thinking, and I believe her story, and the reason I believe her story is it's been vetted by those three world-class hypnotherapists. So is Valiant Thor possible? In my mind, it's entirely possible. Do I know much more than that? I really don't.
Mm-hmm. We have put y'all away first from the YouTube chat. It says, Raymond, after I lived at Wright Pat, I moved to the Air Force Academy, and I was abducted by tall grays and saw military doctors where they took me. I was 5 years old, 1968. Again, here's another story that seems to be a direct connection to Wright Pat and the people getting abducted and or experimented on. And I believe this person is searching for the reason, just as the last viewer was asking, can you help them understand any reason why that would happen? And I'm assuming that it did. I have no reason to question the validity of their statements.
Okay. So why are people being abducted? In Victoria's case, she has been a non-volunteer in the alien breeding program. I see we're coming up on the hour. Anyway, she's been a part of the breeding program. Her eggs have been taken. She's had fetuses implanted in her where she gestated them for maybe 30 to 60 days, and then they were removed. So from that aspect, some of the females are involved in the breeding program. Men have been taken aboard ships and have had their sperm removed. But why would a contactee then be taken again by, let's say, Men in Black, or more likely be taken by somebody in, they call it MILABS, military abductions, where individuals show up, a group shows up in military uniforms? I think the reason that may be is those are the people trying to find out what the contactees know about the ETs. So let's say that I was a contactee. Mm-hmm. Well, what better way for somebody who's studying them to find out about them is to do a second abduction, a civilian abduction, drag them off to, you know, some closed base somewhere and say, hey, you were with these guys on a spaceship. Tell us all about it. So it could be a government or government agency or whomever taking those individuals who are contactees and just trying to find out what they know.
Wow. All right, we have a question here for you. This is from Arkansas Bob. I believe this is from our website chat. It says, Raymond, have you experienced numbers such as 111141s, 333, 444, 55, numbers as in because you're, and I think they're saying in relation to your following the UFO genre, have numbers come up in your studies anywhere or findings?
Well, the only time I think that numbers have come up is a lot of individuals will claim that, I'll ask them, what time was it when your visitors showed up? And they'll say it was 3:33. It was 3:33. And I got that a lot. And I kind of thought about it and I'd say, was it a digital clock? And they said, well, yeah, it was. And you think about a digital clock, you know, there actually is each little bezel behind there, each individual digit is really an 8.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
an 8
it is.
Can display all the different characters and numbers. And so what I'm thinking is that occasionally the crafts, will they'll stop cars, they'll make electronics go haywire. And I'm just thinking that what's happening is that when a ship gets close enough to abduct somebody, taking them through their wall or their window or, you know, beaming up, that it affects the electronics. And what it does is it basically makes the digital clock go all 8s. Mm-hmm. It lights up every little element of each LED, that's the bezel that's sitting back there. And the person goes, well, 888 is not a time, so I'm going to interpret a full-on digital clock as 333. And to me, I just think it's a malfunction of a clock, that's all. And that's why a lot of people will report 333 on a digital clock. Mm-hmm. The other things, you know, if that guy out there has got a lucky number I should play in the lottery, hey, why doesn't he give it to us?
Yeah, for real on that. By the way, where can people get your book, 50 Shades of Grey?
It's available on Amazon. So both books are available on Amazon, and there's one bookstore in the whole country that carries my book. It's because I have a personal relationship with the owner, and every time I make my way through Michigan, I drop off a dozen books. It's called Fenton's Open Book in Fenton, Michigan on Shiawassee. It is the only bookstore in the country that you can buy copies of my book from, and I autograph them all. So they're on their shelf with autograph. Mm-hmm. Oh, and the other place, they can go to the Air Force Museum if they make a stop there. The Air Force Museum carries my first book.
And what about Victoria's Secrets?
I haven't contacted them and told them it's published yet. So, they have to review it, and it goes through a vetting process. So it may make it, it may not.
Are you working on a third book?
I am, actually, yes.
Well, can't wait for that thing to come out. I really don't want to break this up. Do you mind continuing, or do you want to go to break?
I'm good. Let's go. Let's keep going.
All right, because we've got a lot of questions coming in for you.
Great. I'm going to grab a drink of water while we're waiting for the next one.
Yeah. And we'll try to get it everybody's questions. If we miss your question, just resubmit it, and maybe it'll come back through, and we'll try to get it in for you, people that are watching. By the way, those of you just joining the broadcast, we have on our Skype line Raymond Szymanski, and we're talking about his book, 50 Shades of Grey, as that is a stepping stone to the whole Wright-Patterson phenomena as regards to the alien phenomena as well. So, all right, let's get this question here. It says, this is from Stack Stevenson. Is Project Blue Beam responsible for what we're seeing in our skies today?
Well, you never know what the government is working on and what we see. But if we're seeing it in populated areas, I would say probably not. It's probably one of theirs if it's in a populated area. The government is not in the habit of flying their top secret aircraft in public spaces. They just don't do that. So when somebody goes, man, I saw, you know, the TR-3B or whatever, you know, the latest buzz name is, you know, they was flying over the Jersey Shore. Count me skeptical. That's not where they're going to fly them. They're going to go Edwards Air Force Base. They're going to shut it down for, you know, 20 or 30 miles. They're going to go to Area 51. They're going to, you know, shut all that down to fly their stuff. They're just not in the habit of doing it. So if you see a slow moving craft, 90 foot wide, and it's 75 feet off the deck, and it's 200 feet in front of you, and it's got blue flashing lights, it's not one of ours.
Interesting thing happened the other day. I was up early, and my wife and I went out to look up at the skies about 6 a.m. And we looked up, and we thought, oh, there's planets, clear skies, could see everything. And then some object was coming, floating by a planet, and we all look at that. Oh, there is, it must be the space station or something. Then this thing, it stopped. And it like turned and it enlarged. It's like, and we're looking at it, we think, are we seeing what we're seeing? Because as far as I know, satellites and space station doesn't stop and make turns, does it?
To the best of my knowledge, no. So my obvious question to everybody who tells me a story, and I get lots of good stories, I say, did you file this with the National UFO Reporting Center, New Fork? It's Peter Davenport's website. It's a great collection. And any listener out there, I highly recommend, I don't care if you saw the sighting 20 years ago, if you can kind of approximate the date and you can kind of describe what it is, go to New Fork, the National UFO Reporting Center, and file a report, even a simplistic one. And here's why. It helps us researchers determine if there was other activity when we're trying to corroborate somebody's story. For example, in December of 2011, I saw a craft about a mile from my home, 75 feet off the deck and 200 feet in front of me. I did not file that report for like maybe a year, 18 months. But what happened is in the meantime, there were five other sightings in Dayton that week. This is not a high sighting area. Mm-hmm. So what happened is eventually when I was getting ready to file my report, I looked up to see what had happened during that week, and I discovered that five other people had seen things during the week of my sighting. That was instant corroboration. Well, then I go ahead, and I knew it wasn't copycat of mine because mine wasn't there yet. Well, then I put mine in. So another person who might have had a sighting the same week can go there and go, hey, there was something happening here. So it's kind of like a stress relief where you go, okay, somebody else saw it. I'm not crazy. I'll put it in. But it helps us researchers go back and go, hey, what was going on? Or I'm trying to corroborate somebody's story in Denver. So I'll look there to see what other activity was there. So please do that. Whatever you saw, as minimal as you think it might be, go ahead and write a report up.
All right, we have a question from Sugarfoot out of our website chat. Do you believe there is a secret space program?
Wow, how many times have I been asked that? I'm going to say again, anything's possible. You know, I worked for the government for 38 years and 9 months. And actually, that spanned five decades. I started in 1973, and I got out in 2011. So 38 years and 9 months. I saw a lot of things. I heard a lot of things. And I would say absolutely anything is possible. Why not?
Well, you know, I always like to quote the line from Big Trouble in Little China, where the guy says, man, I have to be some kind of fool to think we're all alone in this universe. So, I mean, that's some deep stuff right there. That was coming from Jack Burton. And you don't, you know, he knows stuff, man, okay? Especially when he's got a Bigfoot in the back of his rig there. All right, let's see. We got this question here. But Yahweh First says, they zapped me with a pen-like device and knocked me out, Daniel, because I was screaming so loud. I guess I facetiously mentioned the zapper pen, but this viewer suggests that they were hit by some sort of device.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Victoria's grandson is also investigated in my book. And it turns out that when he was retelling me the story, he actually told it almost word for word like he had told his grandma. What had happened is they had taken him, he was several years old, they had taken him from the upstairs, downstairs, into a room where his toys were, his toy trains, and he called it the choo-choo room. And what happened is he said that they put a booger up his nose. They obviously gave him an implant. Mm-hmm. Why he called it a booger, I don't know. Maybe that's the only thing he ever put up his nose.
Right.
But he said he had that. And then he says this. He says, and Grandma, they touched me on the eye with a stick, and it made me go to sleep. So here is this little boy telling his grandma, and then me later when I go to investigate, that he was touched by a stick. Not his eye, probably his eyebrow, because he was pointing to his eyebrow when it happened. Mm-hmm. So if this individual that just called in with the question says that, you know, there was a twinkle light or they were touched with a stick and they fell asleep or they were floated out, that is certainly within the realm of what I've heard before. Very, very consistent, not only with Bobby's story, who's in the book, but with other stories that I've heard.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have this question. Do you feel that disclosure is near, or are they going to continue to suppress information?
Oh, that's another good question. First of all, I'm not really sure we're ready for disclosure. The second thing is let's just say, for example, that we're not disclosing things because we've got a craft, and we're reverse engineering this craft, and we're spinning off the technology for, you know, the financial robustness of our country. Why would we share that with anybody? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. You want the United States of America to be strong. And one of the ways to do it is through our financial strength. And if we've got things that we're reverse engineering, we're spinning off, we're making money, and we're making America stronger, I'll tell the government, don't disclose that part. You might say, yeah, we got, you know, aliens, but the last thing you'd want to do is put a target on your back to say, you know, we've got alien technology and we're only sharing it as spinoffs. You're getting it second and third party. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't know. I think disclosure is overblown. I don't need the government to tell me that we have aliens. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody needs the government to tell us that. Do your own homework. Mm-hmm. You know, in short order, you'll figure it out. And then go on with the rest of your life.
And in any event, Raymond, no matter how they disclose it, we know that the message will be massaged and warped and focus grouped and calibrated and targeted. We're not going to get this truth no matter what. And I agree with you. People have to search this stuff out for themselves, because the history of the government telling the truth to the American public is so abysmal. It's like, why do we even have a government? You know, there's certainly nobody seems to tell the truth. All right. Our moderator, Jade, asked this question. She wants to know, what do you think of Phil Schneider's story?
Wow. You know, that is divided the UFO community for years. Guys like Stanton Friedman, who's, you know, the dean of all investigators, all researchers, claim he's a fraud. There are other guys who want to build a shrine to Phil Schneider. I know the story. You know, he was at Dolce.
Mm-hmm.
What, pardon?
He was zapped, or he was shot with a ray gun.
Yeah, he was in there. The aliens were shooting at him. You know, the uniform guys were shooting at him. It sounds very far out, but you know what? I wasn't there, and based upon what I know of what people have gone through, I would say that it has plausibility. I'm not saying it's true or false. I'm just saying that, you know, I'm keeping an open mind, and I say that it's definitely plausible.
Well, you know, and that's the thing I say is that when somebody gives you a story, you can't say, "Oh, that's not true. That's not really an answer to a question or the truth of a debate," because you'd have to be there. So if somebody says, "This happened to me," you can't say, "No, it didn't," because you weren't there. So really, you just have to say, "Okay, well, tell me more of the story." And then in your own mind, you will try to determine by their action, their voice, their inflection in their voice, their mannerisms, their history, is it probably true or not? But saying, "That's ridiculous. That can't happen. That won't happen. Never did happen." That's not really not an answer. That's not an intelligent answer when there's a question of such importance out there. All right, let's get to this question from Gladys Kravitz. Let's ask the question, what is the most disturbing UFO or abduction account you have heard of?
The most disturbing account. That's kind of a weird question.
They're all disturbing, aren't they?
Well, you know, let me just go back to Victoria's story. You know, Victoria claims that she's been floated out of her room, literally went underneath her window. I've been up to the room where it happened. I took photographs. I've knocked on the wall. It's very solid. The window is too. I did my due diligence. She has been on tables. She describes it multiple times. There's a spatula-type device. They're removing eggs at one point. They're putting something into her, quite possibly a new fetus to be gestated for a while. I think that's extremely disturbing. And that story is very consistent with other stories. So I think that's really consistent. You don't find, you know, people being cut up and that kind of thing. There's the probing. There's the removal of the eggs and the sperm and the reinsertion of the fetus. Or once it's been gestated for a month or two, it's being removed. And then perhaps they raise it artificially somewhere. So I think that's just disturbing stuff. And Victoria has gone through all of that.
All right. This is from Stack Stevenson. Is our government using DEW as a weapon against the California fires?
Are they using?
It's an acronym.
Directed energy weapons?
Yeah, directed energy weapon.
To do what?
To start, I think. Well, this person asks, are they using it against the fires? But I think other people claim they're creating the fires with these directed energy weapons. What's your view on directed energy weapons?
Well, most of the stuff comes out of Kirtland Air Force Base, which I had the opportunity to be at many times. And I know a lot of the people that worked in that. And I would say that they themselves are not prone to using DEW against anybody at this point. So I would say that's highly unlikely. And I think that's just an irresponsible rumor.
Okay. And now back to the disturbing alien abduction question, though. There seems to be a whole lot of people that are claiming that. How do you dissect the sort of the cultural part of it, where people hear others are abducted and all of a sudden they make a claim? There has to be some percentage of that out there, right?
Well, with respect to Victoria, and I want to use it as a point, I have personally interrogated the hypnotherapist. I was with Barbara Lamb last week. She's one of the ladies. She's one of the therapists who regressed Victoria. And I had three individual conversations with her, and it always came back to, what are the possibilities that somebody like Victoria would be faking her story? And I've asked this question and had discourse with Yvonne Smith, who's one of the hypnotherapists in this case, and long conversations with Dr. Sprinkle. And the unanimous opinion is, in this case, she experienced what she said she did. But in general, very few people, if any, would make that claim, because it's not a popular thing to do. Unless they were desperate for attention, there is absolutely no upside to claiming that you were an experiencer when you were not. It just doesn't. It's possible, but it just defies common sense.
Mm-hmm. This question from Chaka Khan out of the YouTube chat. It says, Raymond, what do you think about the Brain Initiative? I don't know what that is, so hopefully you do.
I don't either. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to pass.
Wait a minute.
I'm really not an encyclopedia in many cases. But
I do have something on the Brain Initiative. There it is right there. I mean, you not believe that brain goes under this hat, man. It's unbelievable. So I
really like your hat, by the way. It's classy.
It's a Stetson, man. It's legit. I didn't get that thing at the Walmart sale. All right. Here we go. Arkansas Bob. Wright-Patterson is mentioned in Steve Quayle's research about a delivery of an 11-foot giant via Afghanistan. Have you heard anything about giants being transported there?
Well, you know, think about it. Wright-Patterson could basically do anything. And here's why. They have security oaths. They have money. They have contracts and contracting. They have 10,000 people on base. Many are scientists and engineers, so they have expertise. They have secure facilities. They have armed guards. They have absolutely everything you need. If they don't have it, they can buy it. If they need an expert, they can rent them. So if anything needs any kind of examination that is aeronautical or maybe even biological, Wright-Patterson can do the job. Absolutely no doubt about it. Now, would they bring giants to Wright-Patterson? I guess it just depends on whether they're trying to figure out if they can fit in the next cockpit design or something. I don't know why they would bring them there, but they pretty much can do anything they want there.
Well, again, I guess that kind of goes to what I just said about people's stories. I mean, I've heard several stories about giants, and there's actually soldiers that claim out there that claim they saw them or they shot them. And so, you know, somebody would say, well, that's ridiculous. There's no such thing as giant guys running around. Again, that's one of those things. Well, I didn't see it. So that's, you know, I maintain an open mind basically on all this stuff. Unless I can disprove it, then their story is just as valid as anybody else's as far as I'm concerned. But like I say, and you said earlier, you know, that you have to do your own research. And certainly you had to have it from different sources. And, you know, but that just goes to the whole topic of UFOs, Raymond, that if they are out there, then you read books on it, you watch videos on it, you look at the night skies. In fact, I was talking to somebody today that claimed that through the use of night vision goggles, you can actually see that. Now, I've heard others from another source talking about different getting various sources, and that's what I do. I've been doing this show since 2004, so you can imagine the amount of videos or guests I've had on the program, but I've heard several of them say, in fact, I think there's somebody in the desert that has tours. You go out there, they provide everybody with night vision goggles, and they all look up and say, you know, you're going to see some action. Have you ever tried or heard people using night vision?
I've been on several of those. Excuse me. The lady you're talking about is Melinda Leslie, and she does the tours out in Sedona. And the reviews she gets are fantastic. I've been out there. I have seen things with night vision, both with some friends in Colorado who have them. One of the most fascinating things ever, actually it happened twice. There's a place called Big Rock, and it's out near Joshua Tree, and there used to be a conference out there. And we went out on a night vision thing, and they didn't have individual night vision, but they had a night vision scope connected to a computer and a screen, and we could watch stuff, and they found some interesting things that were zigzagging across the skies. So that was cool. And then I did a talk at the Michigan Mutual UFO Network a handful of years ago, and there was a gentleman at the meeting there who did the similar thing where he de-scoped it from the headpiece and then just pointed it to the sky, and he had some fantastic videos. So I think that's just absolutely super technology, and if you really want to get into it, get yourself a set of the night vision goggles, and you'll see stuff that'll be amazing.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm a sky watcher anyway. In fact, they call me Daniel Skywatcher. how you like that, man? I can come up with them now, because it's what cowboys can do that. See, so I mean, there's just too many boring hosts out there, man. I just don't want to bore you. But let me ask you something. Have you heard of Chase Klosky?
Yes, I know Chase.
Yeah, we had her on the program back in January, and she's going to be at the upcoming conference in Branson it's a Gen 6 alien disclosure of some kind. I'm going to be there, and there's the number of great speakers are going to be there. So I'm looking forward to that. Are you going to be there?
When is it?
It's in September.
I've not been asked to go. You know, it's kind of strange. Right now I'm transitioning to the other side of the table, where before I was a huge consumer and I made lots of friends, especially with the guys who were the, you know, top researchers. People introduced me, and I, you know, now that I've got the books out and I'm full bore, you know, researcher in my retirement, I'm on the other side of the table, so I don't get to go to as many conferences, you know, unless I'm asked to be a speaker. Yeah. If they ask me, I'd be delighted to go, but thus far it hasn't happened. So.
Well, they haven't asked me, and the reason is because they don't got a screen big enough to say disclaimer, parental advisory. I don't think they got it big enough. They probably don't have the graphics, so therefore they haven't really invited me, so I'm going to be a watcher, you know. I'll be out in the audience there. But hey, we've got another question, and this is kind of goes what we're talking about, giants. Have you heard of the giant of Kandahar? I think it's another giant.
I haven't, but I think these questions could be directed to Jim Vieira. He and his brother are the giant experts. I think it's V-I-E-R-A. So get Jim Vieira on, and he can answer every giant question. He had his own show at one time where they were hunting giants, and they did a lot of great research. So maybe that's a lead for you.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I've never been into giants, but I can tell you I've stood next to some huge people. So yeah, that's possible.
Oh, I'm a giant man from way back. All right, we got this one here. Do you agree that microwave weapons are used by the state for assassinations? Now, we're probably going way off the track on that one.
You know, the CIA hasn't consulted me lately, so. You know, I think you could get enough power out of a microwave to certainly do some damage. You fry somebody from the inside out. Are we using that? I don't know. I sure hope to God we're not.
Well, there was some sort of audio weapon they claim was used against U.S. representatives in Cuba, I think. So that's not out of the ordinary. I mean, you know, a government out of control government with, you just mentioned, Wright-Patterson probably has unlimited budget. And speaking of that, working there for 40 years and coming out in your writing books about it, have you ever got a call from there or email from there saying, hey, Raymond, we know we talk about the base, or back off, or have you got any pushback from them?
No. In fact, just the opposite. A lot of folks have come forward and sent me stuff and said, hey, you missed this. How about this? I'll bring this to your attention. So, you know, that's from former and current employees. No one's breaking their secrecy oath, but they've pointed me in some interesting directions. But what I did is, when the manuscript was ready, I contacted the local public affairs office at Wright-Patterson. I said, hey, you know, I've written this book, and it's got a lot of Wright-Patterson in it, so what do I need to do? They said, well, you need to contact the Air Force Literary Office in New York City, which I did. I gave them a call. We had a conversation. They said, we only have one question for you. Do you have a publisher? I said, no, I'm going to self-publish my first book. They said, then we do not have to see it. I said, now, wait a minute. I want to get this straight. You're telling me if I do not have a publisher, you don't have to see it. They said, well, as long as you're not putting anything classified in there, of course. But no, we don't have to see it. I said, I want that in writing. So they sent it to me in writing. So as long as A, there's nothing that I know is classified, and B, I self-publish, I don't have to do it. And I've been told that it takes usually a year or more for them to approve it, and when it comes back to you, it's like 66% redacted. So you got to start all over again. So my suggestion to everybody out there who wants to write something about their former employment, just self-publish it.
Well, we talked a little bit about the Phoenix Lights, and we talked a little bit about Roswell, but what about the Rendlesham Forest? I understand you actually go there?
I did. In 1980, Rendlesham Forest, oh, that's a beautiful picture. In 1980, the U.S. government, the Air Force, was renting property at Woodbridge and Bentwaters Royal Air Stations. And out the east gate, they thought they saw a fire from the security shack. So they sent out John Burroughs, Jim Peniston, and Ed Cabinsag, three security patrolmen. And they got out there several hundred yards. And what they discovered is what you're displaying on your screen, a triangular craft about 10 feet aside, about 8 foot tall. And Peniston was able to sketch it in his book. Burroughs saw it. Cabinsag hung back because they were doing a relay with their comms because there was a static, probably interference from this craft. And Peniston actually got to draw these glyphs that were on there. Mm-hmm. And he touched it. And when he touched it, he got this download. So very famous story. This all came to light because a couple weeks later, the deputy base commander, Charles Hault, wrote a memo, a two-page memo to the Ministry of Defense and said, hey, we're renting property, and outside the gate of your property, all this stuff happened. Our guys were out there chasing UFOs. They were beaming lights down through the weapons storage area. Later, the nuclear disaster preparedness guy for that outfit in Rendlesham said it burned a hole through the bunker down to where the nuclear weapons were. So I went out there in 2012 to investigate. I tried to find the spot, which I did. I canvassed it. I tried to find new witnesses. And eventually, I talked to Jim Peniston, John Burroughs, and Colonel Hault. And I got their stories, and I was able to quiz them. Burroughs and Hault in person, Peniston via emails. So I went there, and it's a fascinating story, but what happened to me that day that I was there is there was a van that was parked at the entryway where most researchers would enter the woods to follow the footsteps of those guys. And this van was parked there all day. It had windows that were darkened, and I didn't want to get too close to it. And when I got back to the States and I looked up the license plate number, which I'd taken a photo of it, I discovered that the van was from a town. It was registered in a town that was next to Royal Air Station Molesworth, which is an intelligence organization. So somebody drove 2 hours to come across the UK, across England, the opposite side of the country, to get there and camp out all day, possibly surveilling the researchers who were coming in and out of the woods. I found that just to be just super interesting, very suspicious.
I was listening to some of the audio from that just today, and I would actually play it, but I saw somebody got tagged on YouTube for a copyright infringement, so I guess I can't play it. The message that was downloaded into the person, and then when he wrote out was it in code? Was it ones and
zeros? It was a binary code.
Binary code. The message, do you think the message was plausible?
Yes, he touched it. Mind if I tell the backstory to that?
Go ahead.
Okay, so Jim Peniston touches it. He goes back and they process back in, and they realize they have missing time. Their watches are out of sync with each other, and it's also out of sync with the wall clock back where they were reporting in, and as the security police do after they finish every patrol. So he goes back to his room and he takes out his notebook, the same one that he sketched the craft in and the symbology on it. And he wrote 16 pages of ones and zeros. Now, that didn't make sense really in 1980 because, you know, processors weren't common in the household. And like 30 years later, Peniston and Burroughs are at a film shoot. And Burroughs asks Peniston, "You got that book?" He says, "Yeah." So he looks and he sees the drawings, and he flips up and he sees 16 pages of ones and zeros, and he asks Jim Peniston, "What is this?" Peniston says, "I haven't got the foggiest idea. Where did you get this?" He said, "Well, I wrote it down that night. I touched that craft." He said, "And as soon as I touched that craft, that message left my brain. I never thought of it again." John Burroughs said, "I think this is digital code." So they had an expert, and he decoded it, and basically what it said was that this craft was from the future. And it was there looking back at Earth. It was for the exploration of Earth. And it had a star date, you know, some, you know, 8086. And what that message said was, here are some special places. And it gave the coordinates, the GPS coordinates for the pyramids of Giza, some palace in China, the Nazca lines, some place in Sedona. So these are all very, very special places. Now, do I believe the message? Well, I'm not really sure what the message is. It just, the message were these places that today we hold in some reverence, yet why would they be in that message? And the fact that Jim Penniston knew nothing of binary code, and he wrote this down and said, I'll submit this to forensic examination, saying, I wrote this on that night. There's no way this is fake. This is something he got from someone somewhere, and it's in his handwriting, in his notebook, in the ink of 1980 on the page that he had when he was on patrol. Mm-hmm. And here's the fantastic thing about it. He was through drug-fueled after drug-fueled interrogation, and never once did he mention that code. So somewhere in that download, whoever downloaded that to him, put a block in his brain that said, you don't say anything to anybody about this until the time is right. And the time was right 30 years after the fact. Now, that's amazing.
Mm. All right. From a fast blast, we have Kevin in Massachusetts. Did you see any satanic activity in your career?
Never.
All right. And let's get to a couple more real quick here so we try to get everybody. Gord from Canada. Says, Raymond, is it true draconians are here for the good of humanity and the reptilians are here with evil intentions?
I don't think we've decoded anybody's intentions yet, but think about it. You know, if they're subjecting our women to a breeding program and they're subjecting our guys to the same thing, I don't know who's all responsible for that, but I don't think right now that we can see that activity as benevolent.
Mm-hmm. I don't see it as benevolent. All right, so we touched on Reynolds and Forrest. What about the Travis Walton story?
Travis Walton's Fire in the Sky is the book of books. If you want to read the UFO story, Travis Walton's Fire in the Sky. Not only that, the first 300 pages are enthralling, enticing, fact-filled, but the last 100 pages are exceptional because what he does is he takes former debunker Phil Klass and he dismisses. Klass is dismissed. He takes 100 pages and he tries to show all the dirty tricks that Phil Klass and other debunkers tried to pull on him in his story, and he totally blows them out of the water. So I love the book. So one day, what happened is I was going to go and do my investigation of the site, and I just so happened to run into a lady by the name of Jen Stein. Jen had just wrapped a movie called Travis, and I told her I was going to Travis's site. I wasn't sure what it was, and I said, I'm going up there, and she said, hey, I know somebody that can help you find his abduction site. I go, really? Next thing I hear, she's yelling over. She goes, Travis, get over here. And it was Travis Walton himself. He goes, yeah, Jen, what's up? She goes, my newfound friend here wants you to take him to his abduction site, and I need him to shoot photos that we're going to insert into the movie because I needed these stills mm-hmm. of these tree stumps. Mm-hmm. So he and I reached an agreement. A couple days later, we're in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest, and I'm with Travis Walton, just the two of us, standing where he was when he was taken on the 5th of November, 1975. Now, you talk about a religious moment, a surreal moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was dark. It was, you know, about that time of day when they saw this thing they thought was a fire, when he got abducted, and we were finishing the photo shoot, and he just starts talking. And he says, he points, he said, now down there, that road, you can't see it because it's not used much anymore. He said, we were driving on that road and we were pointing over there, and he's pointing around this curve. He said, we got right about there. We thought it was a fire. So we stopped the truck and I got out and the snow was starting to fall. And it's just Travis's voice at the top of this hill. And he says, and I come running up and I see this thing. And I can't remember if he said it was 20 feet or 30 feet. I always think it was 30 feet. But he said there was this object about 15 feet off the ground, and I was behind this pile of slash, and I was observing it, and I kept going, Travis, get back here, you crazy SOB. He said they were yelling at me. And then he said I stood up to re-enter the truck. He goes, and that's when it happened. He said, this thing hit me. Now, you can imagine, I have the most famous UFO abductee one-on-one at his site, and he is telling me this story. And I am just like, don't ask him any questions. Shut your mouth. Let him finish. So he did, and he tells me the story of how they thought it was weaponized and how they came back. And I got on the site that whole thing. And, of course, I put that story in the book. And, you know, that is the moment I decided to write a book.
Wow.
Because I never thought about doing it until he shared that with me.
Mm. And so, obviously, you believe his story.
Well, who wouldn't believe it? He has six witnesses who each passed multiple lie detector tests. He has passed multiple lie detector tests. Mm-hmm. Their story has never changed. Mm-hmm. And the guys who have done the lie detector test have said the odds of seven individuals who did not get a chance to swap stories is astronomical. It's beyond mathematics. In my opinion, it is the best documented, most believable case ever, without a doubt.
Did he tell you what happened when he was on the ship?
Yes.
Did they experiment on him in very nasty ways?
He told me things that aren't public and aren't in the book, so I'd really rather not reflect on it. But I can tell you that you know, Travis's first thoughts were that they shot him, that it was a weapon. And he realized later that he was picked up to be healed and that it was an accident. So he has come to that. And recently I read that now he's starting to think that he has been an abductee prior to that incident. Now, I don't know much about it. I haven't read that. Mm-hmm. But I think that Travis was actually healed beyond what he was injured. So I think that he went through hell, but I think he really came out of it for the better. And again, there are many things he told me that I promised I wouldn't tell him. Mm-hmm. And I think he told it to me, you know, kind of a buddy thing. Mm-hmm. You know, were he to pass away before I do and I write another book, I might share that, but I would never do that while he's mm-hmm. still alive.
So did you get the opinion that when someone is abducted, they don't necessarily have our best interest in mind? But in this case here, I guess it kind of going back, it went back the other way to where he feels like it was a good thing, I guess, hey?
Yeah, he was basically dead. You know, burned over 90% of his body, and they kept him in the gels, and they kind of kept him relaxed the best they could. You know, he has a story where he felt better and he jumped up and punched somebody. But for the most part, they healed him, and they were smart enough to put him back in a location where he could walk readily to that old, well, probably wasn't abandoned then, but to walk to that famous phone mm-hmm. booth mm-hmm. and make the call.
What happens with this missing time? Did he experience missing time?
5 days of it.
So that's obviously one of the longer ones. A lot of times, though, say somebody sees a UFO or something like that. I mean, it may happen on a smaller scale. I remember in the X-Files, Mulder would always get out of the car and make an X there in the road to try to calculate the missing time. But what do you think is causing that missing time?
You know, there's some physics going on that is well beyond my understanding. It's as if they're on a different time, a different dimension, maybe runs on a different time. So you might be taking into a different dimension. And so the physical world acts differently. Your watch acts a certain way in this atmosphere and these physics that we know. And so when you're returned, they'll often find that the missing time is your watch will show you've only been gone for 5 minutes because that's all it's advanced on your hand. But when you look at a wall clock, you'll see that it's 45 minutes, an hour. In Travis's case, it was 5 days. And he came out with a 5-day growth in his beard. He was malnourished. He was dehydrated. He was clearly gone for 5 days. And they told him that. And Travis thought he was gone for 15 minutes. So his perception was, hey, I was gone for 15 minutes. Why do I feel so hungry and thirsty and I have this beard? I don't understand the physics, but I think that same physics is responsible for them being able to come and go, blink in, blink out, stealth, mm-hmm. outrun everything, mm-hmm. come from different galaxies. I think it has to do, their physics is different from our physics.
Mm-hmm. Raymond, a lot of people claim that when there are UFO activities, there's also appears to be in some areas Bigfoot activities. Is there any correlation between the two?
You know, I've heard a couple of incidents of a Bigfoot or a creature like a Bigfoot being connected to a UFO, but only one or two. There's a couple of famous cases. Again, it's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm. What about other creatures, say like Mothman, Slenderman, various Dogman? I mean, because we actually discussed in the first hour, talking about this is a big universe and there's all sorts of things that are probably out there. I mean, are these all made up? Are people just agging in to, hey, I got a creature too here, you know? Or is there some truth behind, maybe a sliver of truth behind all of it?
Well, again, I like to reference what I know as a base. And if I go to Victoria's story, if I didn't have the evidence, I would go, this person, you know, needs some serious therapy. But I've investigated it. I vetted the story. I have all the evidence. And they say, Victoria says, it was Mantis in robes. And it's funny, when she mentioned Mantis in robes, I actually found other reputable descriptions of other people in sources that I know she didn't have or couldn't have. And I double checked to see if she did have. They mentioned mantis-like creatures in Jesuit robes. I thought that's really weird.
Hmm.
She talks about the grays. She talks about reptilians. So when somebody tells me they see a Bigfoot, why not?
All right.
Why not? A wolfman.
That's what I say. Why not?
Why not?
Because you've heard a lot of stories about other things. Why not? And I agree with it. Why not?
And I've vetted these stories. That's what's important.
Yeah,
I just didn't accept them carte blanche.
Yeah, we actually had a man from British Columbia last week on the program talking about Bigfoot, and he's says that, you know, he kind of communicates with him, but he said that they go all the way from 6 inches to 11 feet. So I that's the first time I ever heard of a 6-12 inch Bigfoot, and I thought, why not?
What? You know what? Until you can disprove it, and if you have an open mind, you just got to say, you know, it's entirely possible.
Now, I got some hate mail from that too, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, man, come on. You know, people need to lighten up. And I noticed that in some ways they say that you have some humor either contained in the book or the way you present it. Is that true?
I'd like to think so. And the reason I did that, especially in the first book, is I wanted to introduce the subject to people who wouldn't ordinarily read it. And I've actually had the feedback that said, it's laugh out loud funny. It's in the right spaces. You treat the subject seriously, but you show the lighter moments. Like, you know, Travis Walton and I are slip sliding up, and we're going up the mountain to get to his site. And we're on 3 inches of mud, and we see these wild horses. So I'm slowing the car, and I say to Travis, hey, do you want to go get a closer look at these wild horses? And my car was hardly stopped when he had the door open, and he was heading out to get a closer look. And so in the book I wrote, you know, the last time Travis Walton left the safety of a truck in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest didn't work out too well for him.
No.
And there I was watching him, you know, go chase mm-hmm. down, you know, these wild horses. Mm-hmm. So I do it to make it less of a dark subject. And mm-hmm. people will say, hey, yeah, you know, I can see how there's a lighter side to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the premise of this show is three parts: entertaining, enlightening, and controversial all at the same time. And it's okay to know some of these really critical things, but some people, man, they get wrapped up. And if you veer off course, you know, say if you make a joke about, you know, Planet X coming in and people saying, it's really coming. What's the matter with you, Daniel? Don't you know what they're going to, you know, it's like, dude. And they'll write the big old letters. Just, you know, look, just back off, man. We'll talk about it. But it's, you know, don't get so wrapped up in it, man. Some people just get wrapped up in that. And they want it straight by the book, man. If you crack a joke, they just lose it. I'm thinking, now, these are the people that need to unwind. They need to do what Neo did, and they need to get unplugged. You know what I mean?
Ha ha. I'll share this with you, and I'm not making fun of this person. I just found it funny. She called into the show. It was Coast to Coast with George Knapp a week ago, and she said, I want to just tell you a story. I don't have a question. We said, fine. And she was telling us a story about this craft, you know, she was watching through her telescope somewhere in the California desert, and it was very fascinating. And then she, I don't know why she did this, but she said, uh-oh. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
And she said, and then I looked at my telescope, and I was looking that alien right in the eye.
Wow.
So it was a great story up until that point.
Yeah. I'm in the Matrix, by the way, is what it is.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought I'd lost you for a second.
No, the Matrix has me. But yeah, man. So yeah, you know, there are. Look, I had a lady on the program a few years back. She said she was up in a mountain. She said men in black came up to her house, and she had levitation technology that she'd learned from the aliens, and these men in black wanted her to take that technology and take it back, and so she wouldn't do it, and they abducted her. So you know, I mean, why not?
Until you can prove it's impossible, then it's certainly possible.
Yeah,
and based on my investigation and everything I've heard, seen, done, people I've talked to, I'll tell you what, I go to these conferences and I think I know a lot, and then I come out of there going, I don't know jack. Now I can cut through the crap because I got a big BS filter. For example, one prominent speaker said last week, we have a million people on the moon. Count me skeptical on that one. We had another person say that they were a reincarnation of St. Peter, the apostle. Okay, count me highly skeptical on that one. So, mm-hmm. You know, people do their homework, go to these conferences, read, mm-hmm. watch TV, learn who the reputable mm-hmm. people are, and then make your own decision. You'll grow your own BS filter.
Yeah.
For this stuff.
Well, I mean, that's clear. I mean, it can't be a million people on the moon because we all know there's only enough resources for about a half a million. So, you know, there's no way it can sustain life for a million people. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
How many hidden space launches would that have taken?
Hey, by the way, you know, we had Ed Mitchell on his program one time, and I asked him, you know, he wrote the book Before His Death, and on the way to the moon, he said he saw all kinds of things. And I said, well, why didn't you say these things when you were in the program? And he said, because then you would disappear. He said, but I'm so old, kind of old now, I don't even care. So, you know, but you know, when you have somebody respected like Ed Mitchell, you know, telling you things like that, you know, what they saw, UFO craft and things, you know, that one might be believable there. I think that will go in. I think the filter said okay on that one for me.
Gordon Cooper's another astronaut. There's a string of them who came forward and said, we saw things in space that, you know, we can't explain. We know they were craft that supposedly weren't ours or the Russians, and we took photographs of them, and when we got back, it was confiscated, and we were sworn to secrecy. So, you know, when the astronauts, who among us have been closer to the phenomena than the astronauts in space, mm-hmm. and it's right outside their windows, they're calling mm-hmm. in going, it's the booster. And the guy goes, nope, the booster is out over Guam. Mm-hmm. Okay, then.
There have been a number of folks come on this program saying that one of the known weapons of defense against aliens is something called Orgon. Are you familiar with that?
It's called what?
Orgon.
No, I thought it was playing Slim Whitman music.
you mean like my background?
No, have you seen the movie Mars Attacks?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, they play the Slim Whitman music and all the heads explode of the aliens. So I'm figuring, nah, it's got to be Slim Whitman music. No, I've heard nothing about that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Have you actually seen a UFO yourself?
Yes.
What did it look like to you?
Well, I saw it on the back end. I was coming home from a physical therapy appointment. I'd had an accident, and I was coming home. It was about a mile from home. Something came over my car through the moonroof, and I saw like a shadowing or something. It was a mm-hmm. disturbance in the glass. Mm-hmm. And then I saw it. It was a early December day. What it looked like was about 90 feet. I know that because I measured the building over which it floated. I went back.
Nice.
And it was scalloped It was scalloped, and there's actually a picture of it, a drawing of it in my book, and it had like five or six of these large red lights in the back. And the funny thing is, when I saw it go over, I didn't say to myself, oh my God, that's a UFO. Mm-hmm. Being born and raised in Detroit, I go, that looks like the back end of a Chevy. The old cat eyes. Remember they used to have three lights on one side and three lights on the other?
But the chrome in the middle.
They're 60 Chevys. They called them the cat eyes. Yeah. And I looked like, that looks like a Chevy. And I go, holy, then it was holy crap. But I saw it maybe 7 or 8 seconds, and it was going in my direction. When I saw it, it was about 200 feet in front of me, about 75 feet off the deck. How it didn't hit the treetops, I do not know. And I was going southbound on this road, and it was heading in that direction when I saw it. So, you know, I kept looking, driving for like another mile, trying to see it, and I never saw it through the clouds again. It was gone.
Mm. Well, at least you weren't chased by the Mothman, because a lot, you know, that's the story of that one. You're driving down the road, and the Mothman is like flying
this
by.
This was a daylight spotting.
Wow.
Daylight sighting. Absolutely. It was probably, I'm going to guess, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that.
Mm-hmm. I saw one once. Actually, the first time I saw a UFO, I was people who watched the show probably heard this story, but I was sitting on the roof of one of my brothers. I was about 19, and we were just chatting away. I'm not going to say what we were doing on the roof, but we were up there. And look at right up there, man, the classic cigar-shaped UFO was just sitting there. And so, like, we continue to talk, you know, I'm acting like I don't see it, you know. And so I see his eyes connect to it. And the thing is sitting there, and then it goes, zoop. Then it goes, zoop. I mean, an L-shape, perfect. It went zip, zip, just like that. And I said, I don't know what you saw, but I saw something. And so to verify it, we went down in the house, and he took paper and I took paper. We both drew what we saw so we wouldn't alter the visual of it. And it was a classic cigar-shaped UFO.
Now, did you guys ever talk about it afterwards?
No. Never talked about it since. It's been a family secret. We don't talk about the UFO side anymore. Because
well,
then
it's
we
not
would...
a secret. It's not a secret anymore, I might tell you.
Oh, hold on. I just told some people. I guess I let it out of the bag. But no, never have.
I'm sorry.
I never have discussed it since.
I don't talk about it too often, but I put it in the book because it was just, you know, I didn't want to say I'm one of you guys, but it just says, hey, I saw it, I admit to it, and, you know, hopefully those folks who've also seen things will report it to the National UFO Reporting Center.
Mm-hmm. Well, Raymond Szymanski, it's been a real pleasure having you on the Edge Television broadcast. How can people get your book there? Tell them one more time.
Type in the first two words, 50 Shades and UFO. On Amazon, Google it. If you type in 50 Shades UFO, you'll find all my other stuff. You'll find presentations, interviews. You'll find the book up there, and the new book is up there now. So I want to say thank you for having me on. It's been a lot of fun. I just can't believe with Texas Tech playing Michigan State right now that you didn't move this so we could have watched the basketball game.
Well, that's what YouTube is for, man. So just don't find out what the score is. Just go to the YouTube version of it.
No, absolutely. I've got a DVR upstairs. I'm going to go have a beer, maybe some chips or popcorn. I'm going to relax the rest of the evening. But I want to thank you. It's really, really, really been a blast. I enjoyed it. You never know what you're going to get when somebody asks you to be on their show, but a great pleasure. And I have been to Texas quite a few times because I work with the General Dynamics guys back when I was a government guy. So had a lot of fun down in Texas.
All right, Raymond Szymanski, I appreciate you coming on the show. Can we have you on again sometime?
Absolutely. Just give me a buzz and we'll do it again.
All right. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.